Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the show on this first day of December, and it is a Friday, and we like Fridays here. So I've been really screwing up the dates every day. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm not ready to talk just yet.
Do you eat before you go on the radio?
I do not eat before I go on the radio. There's only a cup of coffee, and that gets me until 2 o'clock, 2:30.
Well, I'm not as alert today because I didn't have my breakfast.
Oh, okay. Did you have coffee? No coffee either.
I rolled out of bed.
Okay. Well, we have an awesome guest who will be joining us in just a moment. So we'll bring up the pace here a little bit and try to keep you awake, Rachel. Mm. But you have a weekend in which you get to rest a little bit. So there you go. Big news this morning, Rachel. Did you catch it?
Of course. Flynn.
Flynn pleads guilty. Flynn pleads guilty to lying to the FBI about the Russia investigation.
I will say I spent the whole day in bed hate-tweeting the president. It was awesome. Just talking shit to
him. Hate-tweeting? Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Not like, I fucking hate you. Just like right. talking. Just like he puts out an obnoxious tweet. I respond with asking him to resign. Don't worry about turning off the lights. Just leave. Mm. And we'll get like a bazillion likes.
Well, it's not looking good for him now.
Yeah.
If they're going to start.
Well, the best part is like watching. I can't wait. Honestly, I can't wait until after the show to go home and watch Sarah Huckabee Sanders try to defend what is.
To understand.
Just
it.
Try.
Yeah.
Just. I mean, she just. Her and Kellyanne Conway, this presidency is just not kind to them, you know? And you can just tell it's like wearing on them physically.
I mean, Sean Spicer quit this frigging job because he couldn't handle it.
I thought he got fired. No.
Or whatever it was, yeah, but he couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
You know?
But I mean, only time will tell. I mean, people who didn't vote for Donald Trump, like myself, from the beginning, as soon as he was like, I'm running for president, and I'm like, that's a terrible idea.
Right.
Because this is all going to happen, you know? Yeah. So what happened? But it's just like, I just want this shit to be over with because it's bad for for my mental health, for the country's everything. I mean, it's. We need just good leaders in office.
It's distracting.
And
no
unfortunately,
doubt.
This country is run by greed and people who have the most money with the most power and the most influence. And that's the world, right?
That's the world. There you go. It's always been like that.
Right.
The people with the power are the ones that run the country.
And we here at the bottom spend our lives trying to attain that which we will never most likely reach, but we can try.
Look, we have the opportunity in America. It really depends, you know.
Well, I mean, I want to believe that there is opportunity. I will say that. Do I think that it was like it was back in the day? Do I think the American dream is attainable? As it's not. I mean, it's just the reality is a lot of people will spend most of their lives trying for something because the system is working against them, not because they didn't do everything right. It's just not built for many people to have a lot of wealth. There's not enough money to go around.
Where,
not enough
here?
Opportunity in the world. And here's
in America, you got to be kidding me. There's so much money going around
but
here.
But I think that
we're the richest country. You know?
But then why are so many people living on the street?
Well, you're always going to get the people on, you know, on the fringes
I read
and stuff.
I mean, I don't know. I did everything right. I went to college and I have a master's degree and the jobs that are available for what I went to school for are not enough.
Right. Rachel, you keep talking from your own experience and I wish you'd
I'm one of the lucky ones because I have an education and I don't have any student debt. And the thing is like, there are people who are going to spend most of their lives just trying to pay off those student debt and those loans and just to even get above the red line. And then one day they wake up, they're 60. you know what I mean? And
But what are we going to do? Live in a victim mentality?
I
mean, everybody's got college debt, you know? And the thing is you have...
I think that you have to be realistic.
Yeah.
And I think being realistic it, like, you have to realize, like, it's not set up for all of us to be successful. It's not meant for us to be easy.
I disagree. Because today, if you wanted to do anything that anybody else does, you can.
That's why health and
that's why everybody moves here.
Who are in debt because of health, because they can't, because the health insurance in this country is so expensive that people, you can't even afford to get sick, and people can't even afford to pay their rent because they're too big. I mean, it's not set up for people to be successful, in my opinion. If they change things, and that was my point, was if we elect good people who make good decisions and really care about the American people, then I do think that we can create a place where people can be successful and live lives worth living. But in the current condition, I don't think it's easy.
But are you saying we didn't have any of these problems when Obama was in charge? Like, for example, no homelessness, no people in debt, no this, no that?
Do I think those problems still existed? They absolutely still existed. But do I think that Obama really had the better interests of the American people? 100%. I have health care because of Obama.
No, that's different. I mean, but that's different because the thing is, you have to look. You were talking about specific things, and I wanted to give you an example. This is part of capitalism. It's not part of, like,
I think capitalism is kind of shitty.
Okay, that's the thing. That's why, you know, that's why you're a liberal, and that's what liberals think.
But I think capitalism at one time might have worked, but not in the current state of today's society, because the wealth is so concentrated at the top. How is it fair for the people, the small businesses? It's so hard for them to even survive with all of the things that they have to deal with. It's not designed for the small little guy to want to be successful. It's like the people at the top have the most money. They have the most control. Everything is corporate.
Maybe they do, but it's still, I disagree that there's no opportunity for small business. I don't. But you know what? Let's leave the politics.
I didn't say that there wasn't. I'm just saying it's not easy. It's not designed for them to be successful.
Yeah, but is it easier to make money somewhere else? I don't know. And, you know, that's...
It seems so. That's why we have so many foreign people coming into this country with all the money, because they seem to have all of the money.
Because they need to invest in a place that's successful and growing and flourishing, you know. But, Rachel, a couple more things. We'll go back to the politics, but we have an awesome guest who is going to help us talk about politics, so I don't want to alienate him too much before that. Anything else? I guess next week I'm going to be traveling. So we'll have Thursday, Friday off next week. And I'm going to go see some friends up north. And I'm looking forward to getting away for a few days. So that'll be nice. Okay, well, there's so much in the news today, but we have such a fascinating guest that we're going to bring him on right now.
I just hope I just want their entire family to go to prison. I want everyone who's involved with Donald Trump to go to prison.
You know what? If they did, if they had wrongdoing, I'm with you 100%.
To me,
I don't
want
anybody
to
betray this
country. It's still shocking, and that it's still shocking to me that you don't see
what
there was wrongdoing on his side.
Whose side?
Trump.
I'm saying I don't see it. Of course I see it. You know my feelings today. My feeling is this. Let me put it to you this way. Let me explain to you quickly how it all went down, okay? When Donald Trump first made an announcement to go in, I said, oh, no. Okay? Now, he competed with 17 other candidates in the primaries. He was not in my top 10, okay? He ended up taking the nomination.
But you voted for him.
Right. So I had to vote for the Republican Party. I did not know.
You did party over country. I mean, that's...
What's that?
Party over country.
No, that's not true. It's idealism. It's idealism. It's not party. I'm a conservative before I'm an... You know what? Let me tell you this. The Republican Party today does not represent the majority of my...
They're anti-Semitic peers. And they're racist.
I don't agree, but...
A lot of them
are. Look, a lot of them... Many,
are you
maybe
kidding?
Some,
Donald Trump retweeted a hateful anti-Muslim video that turned out to not even involve Muslim people at all.
Right.
And am I okay with that?
No, that's what I'm saying.
And our biggest ally, Theresa May, is like talking shit. Our country needs a serious therapy session.
Well, but that's okay. That's
like
the thing.
Maybe a detox.
I think America is exceptional, and I love this country, and I don't think we need to change. I mean, there's a lot of things to change.
Honestly,
I'm sorry. That's not what I mean.
Attitudes like that are the reason why we're in this problem.
Really?
Yeah.
That America is great?
Your attitude is just so stuck.
No, but I'm...
It's like, we don't need to change. We do. We have a lot.
I'm taking it back. I was going to finish what I said. There's a lot of things to change.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things to change. Okay? I agree. And first thing is at the top. No, I do not support our president the way he has been in his first year.
I resent people who voted for Donald Trump.
Okay, so you can resent me. I can live with that, Rachel.
We told you guys. We all told you this would happen. But
what?
What's happening? He's a bad dude.
Okay, so all right. So, I don't know. I mean, there's plenty of things.
I'm still like Flynn standing on the podium, lock her up. I mean, I can't wait to see him go to prison. I mean, it's comical. Mm. I mean, you have to find the humor. Otherwise, you're just going to go insane. I feel like I've slightly gone insane, but like I've also found the humor.
Yeah.
Through Twitter. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm just waiting for my robocall from the government where they're harassing me for harassing the president.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's bring in our guest right now who's been sitting here patiently. And Wayne, I really appreciate your patience. We're joined by Wayne Evershaw. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you, Sam.
Did I say your last name correctly?
You did, Evershaw. Thank you. Okay, very spirited conversation
there. Right? So we figured we'd turn you on a little bit, start the spark, because you're in politics, right? You have been?
I have been. I used to work, I ran two successful Los Angeles City Council campaigns. I've advised other campaigns and ballot measures, and I worked at City Hall for those two City Council members.
Yeah.
So that was years ago. But I've remained active in politics.
Oh, okay. So, and you're an Angeleno? You grew up here in Los Angeles?
Yes, I was born and raised in Los Angeles. Spent most of my life in the San Fernando Valley.
Oh, okay. So you're a local. For those of you who don't know, we are in the San Fernando Valley. So he's a neighbor. You're a neighbor, and you've grown up here. And when you start describing where you went to school and all that, it's like we probably had parallel childhoods or something, you know, growing up and stuff. Because we went to the same school, lived in the same area. So there you go. You know, we might find a lot in common. Maybe not politically. I don't know where you stand on that, but we'll get to there if you want to. So you're also an attorney, right?
Yes, I've been an attorney. I left City Hall. I worked in business for a while, and then I've been an attorney for over 25 years.
And what kind of law do you practice?
I do. I try to do what I know. I do real estate law and land use law, and I represent clients before government agencies. So I go before the city council, the county board of supervisors, in various jurisdictions throughout Southern California and Northern California. I've gone, and even Idaho and Nevada.
Right. Wow. So you've been around. And you've also written a book, and we'll get to the book in a little bit as well, because it sounds fascinating to me. Now, when did you write the book?
Oh, I started writing years ago. I took writing courses at UCLA Extension to sort of learn how to write. I do think most attorneys know how to write, but to write a fiction work, it takes a certain discipline and talent and skill.
That's true.
So I took a series of classes.
Like creative writing and fiction writing and things like that?
Correct. And I had a great writing coach at UCLA who steered me. And it takes, to write is to rewrite, Sam.
Yeah.
So you write it, you think you're done, and then somebody says it's good. But needs a little work.
Yeah.
So you keep writing.
Oh, well. And how long does it take to write a book like this? How long did it take you?
Well, I always had a full-time job practicing law, so it took a few years. It did. And I thought I had it done a couple of times. I am fortunate enough to have a great agent, Linda Langton, who believed in the work. And she's the one. She has an editor who I worked with to improve it. And then Linda found a publisher, Fiery Seas, and they published it, and it's available now.
Wow.
If I may give a quick plug, Sam.
Of course, go ahead. So let's talk about the book now, and then we'll get into other things. The book is called Roll the Dice. Tell us a little bit about the plot, the main characters, and then we'll talk about how it came about for you.
Okay, Roll the Dice is available now. It's on Amazon, Goodreads, BarnesandNoble.com, and in several Barnes & Noble stores. Roll the Dice, in a short version, is about Tyler Sloan. He's a big rock star, member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And
he's a big rock star.
Big rock star.
Yeah.
He turns 50, and he's in Las Vegas doing residencies similar to how Rod Stewart does residencies.
Celine Dion is
another one. And Tyler Sloan is there. He's not producing the big hits he used to. And his father was a famous politician, a governor of California, almost president. So Tyler Sloan's in Las Vegas. The senator from Las Vegas dies. There's an open United States Senate seat. And Sloan leaves the stage and runs for the Senate.
Wow.
That's the book in 30 seconds.
Wow. So he goes from rock to politics.
Yes. And it's interesting. You know, when I started writing the book, Schwarzenegger was the governor of California. And I thought, okay, if Schwarzenegger can do it, maybe a rock star one day will do it.
Right.
So
why not? I mean, we've got to reality show host.
Are you kidding? Kid Rock wants to run.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, look who we've got as president, you know, a reality show host, you know?
Yeah, no, so, but there are musicians who are running.
Yeah, well, they may as well, right? I mean, Al Franken got as far as his Congress.
All the old rules are gone.
Yeah.
It used to be you'd work your way up, city council, Congress, governor, senator, and then you'd run. Now you can go from TV like Trump. You can go from Saturday Night Live like Franken.
Right.
And maybe Tyler Sloan can go from the stage to the Senate.
Wow. So, and this takes place in Vegas. Now, what attracted you to that place? It's a setting for your story.
I find Las Vegas one of the most, if not the most, fascinating cities in the world. I've been going there. I went there with my parents when I was a little boy, and I still enjoy going there. To me, it's different than any other city in the world. It's set in Nevada. I find Nevada interesting with the small towns in the West.
Right.
But Las Vegas, with its man versus nature, it's the lights of the Strip. It's the desert. It's just, there's nothing like it.
Yeah. That's true. You know that Rachel is from there, mm-hmm. and I lived there a couple of times in the 70s and in the 90s. Did you ever live there?
Never lived there.
Yeah, but you go a lot.
I go a lot. I almost moved there, actually, in the 90s myself, but it did not happen. But it's just, if you're setting a book somewhere, you want to write what you know about,
uh-huh.
and I obviously know about California, but I thought Nevada was just a more diverse set of interests.
Right. And it's more, yeah, I can see that. I can totally see that, you know. Now, you've seen the town change over the years like I have. Do you remember how small it used to be, like in the 70s?
I do, and I tried to make in the book, Roll the Dice, Las Vegas almost a character in the book. I talked a little bit about...
Is that in current day, the story?
Yes, the story's in current day.
Yes.
And there's a number of sites in Las Vegas. There's a scene at the Mandalay Bay. There's a scene at the Wynn Hotel. There's a scene at various restaurants there. And Sloan also went there as a child with his father and mother. So I recall some of the sights that I saw when I was a boy going to Las Vegas.
Wow.
Yep.
Very impressive. So did you always know you wanted to write something like this, or is this like later on?
Probably later on, but as an attorney, you write documents. I write a lot of documents. And this is just a heck of a lot more fun writing a novel than an easement or purchase agreement.
Wow. Yeah. And you must be a big reader, right? I mean, if you want to write a novel, that's because you probably read a lot of them, right?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. See, I can relate because I'm a big reader myself, you know. And I know, I mean, I read a lot of nonfiction, but fiction is a whole different animal. You know, you have to come up with a story. Now, let me ask you this. I've heard several, like... approaches to writing. How do you approach it? Do you know what the ending is going to be in the beginning? Do you have the whole story, or do you sort of like start somewhere and then see where the story takes you?
Well, it's a good question, Sam, because I had the outline in my head, and then I put it on paper in the computer, and the original ending was different than the current ending. And I had the ending submitted to my agent, and it was her comment. She said, you know, you have to have a little, you have to tweak the ending a little bit. So I did, and I'm very happy with it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm eager to read it now. And any other main characters there that in the story?
Yes, it's I try to create a diverse, interesting group of characters. Sloan has there's conflicting loyalties. He has a campaign manager who is his dad's campaign manager, who has his own legal problems. Sloan's attorney has conflicting loyalties because he represents interests in Nevada. Sloan has a difficult ex-wife, which everybody, man or woman, who's been divorced can probably say, yes, I understand a difficult ex-spouse. But let me say my ex-spouse is fine. But Sloan has a difficult ex-spouse, and he has a child, and he's got a past. So he's a rock star, and a rock star has a past with, you know, there's the old line about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Right. And Sloan has that past, and when you run for office, your past can always come back to help you or harm you.
Wow. Now, the music that's featured in the book, I'm sure there's some music. Where's that from, the 70s?
Sloan was a teenage rock star, but his peak was probably the 80s.
The 80s, okay, the 80s. A little later than that. And he's 50 now. Okay, I can see that. Yeah, totally. Yeah you see, I wanted to be a rock star, just like probably many people do. And I actually sang and played the guitar and had bands and stuff. But my parents told me you got to get a real job, so I did.
Well, I have no musical talent, but I love rock music.
Yeah.
So
I know there's something about music, though, right? What kind of music do you connect to? I mean, does music ever move you?
Reggae.
Really? Mm-hmm. That, like, really moves you.
I mean, just love the steel
drum. I love
drum.
Reggae, too. But, wow, I didn't think that'd
it's
be
there's
the first
something,
one.
Well, there. I don't know if you've ever seen the video of the baby crying in the car, and then the dad puts on Bob Marley, and just right as you hear the steel drum, the baby immediately stops
really?
Crying and just starts,
oh,
like,
God.
Yeah. It's there's something soothing about the music.
Wow. And that's just and with that song? Only
no,
with
no.
that song that the baby is soothed?
I just saw that one video, but it went like viral.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any science behind it, but it was that was like, yeah, that's how I feel. Because like if you think about it, you put on a Bob Marley song out of nowhere, and people just immediately like, yeah, it's all
that's
good.
True. It's not a disagreeable type of music.
But I grew up listening like because my dad's from out here, so I listened to like the Beatles and the Guess Who and like all the Eagles and
right.
you know. But I like 80s music. I don't really like a lot of today's music.
Yeah
I like hip-hop, but not even like the, you know.
I know what music trash. Moves you? I mean, like, because you know, I mean, there's some songs that just kind of grab me in the heart and the soul when I first hear them, and then I have to hear them a million times.
Well, I'm a little like Rachel's father. I think the Beatles, the Stones, that era was the songs when I was growing up. Reggae, I'll tell you, if you hear a good reggae song, and I'm not a student of reggae, but Jimmy Cliff, Marley, and it just makes you smile.
Yeah.
It does, right?
And you kind of bob your head, and you feel things are moving here.
Remember the song, Don't Worry, Be Happy?
Yeah.
Don't worry, be happy. That's right.
Yeah, I love, I could listen to Bob Marley on repeat all day.
Well, yeah, that's cool. But with me, there's some pop tunes, but mostly rock tunes that I just love, you know. Mm-hmm. And the music I listen to can be by mostly musicians you know, but some songs that you may not know, you know, because the songs they've always played on the radio, they played the shit out of them, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I remember, especially in the 70s, there was AM radio, that's all we had, and Top 40 or something, and they played the same song every hour, and that was the rotation. And I'm like, God, I'm so sick of these songs. So that's why some songs I can't listen to anymore. But other songs by the same acts, I love. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, that's a good point, because I was talking to my son. I have two wonderful sons, and both in their 20s. And I played for him, he was in my car, a great Dylan song, Subterranean Homesick Blues. but it was done by a current band. It was off a movie, Not Fade Away. And a great song can be done 10 different ways. You can take a great, Elvis songs and do them reggae. You can take Beatles songs and do them jazz style. So I think that's the beauty of a great song. Dylan songs, you can do 100 different ways.
Really? Wow. Have they made other Dylan songs in other genres that you know of?
Oh, yes. I'm a big Dylan fan, and there's other CDs, compilations of, there's one called A Nod to Bob that takes Dylan songs and does them, different people doing them different ways.
I like that. There's one album, Songs of Elton John, that I liked, and people were singing either with him or his songs, and it was amazing. You know, so I love stuff like that, playing back and forth with genres and things like that.
Right, and then you get something new out of the song, a different interpretation.
That's true, right?
So yeah. I like that.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. So what kind of movies did you grow up on? Like Star Wars and...
Well, sure, I saw Star Wars. I have a wide variety of taste. Classics like Casablanca is my favorite movie.
That was a good movie.
That was
but
a great
it's even
movie.
Before your time.
It's way before my time. I saw you on black and white on television. It was great. But I love going to the movies. I love the whole experience.
Yeah.
You're in the darkened theater. The sound is cranked up. It's quiet.
Right, with other people.
The big screen. Yeah. It's a communal experience.
And it is.
You leave, and if I go with my wife, we talk about the movie afterwards.
Right.
And it's just a fun experience.
That's true. It's just not as common anymore. People don't go as much to the movies. It's gotten so expensive, too, you know? I mean, it's like $15 a ticket. That's $30 for two people, plus the popcorn and the Coke, another $20, and you're looking at $50 just to go for a two-hour movie. But, you know, where you can stay home. In fact, the reason I brought up Star Wars is for some reason I decided I need to see Star Wars now. So I got all the first original three. I started watching it last night. And it's just amazing to still watch, you know, what went on. But there's so many, I mean, we grew up on so many different things, you know. And it's just amazing all the different stuff that came out.
Well, technology has made it easy to stay home.
Yeah.
I mean, you sit there with Apple TV, Amazon, Netflix. It's an easy experience.
Right.
You don't get up. You don't get dressed. You just sit there and you're in. So it's great.
But
it's fun.
More affordable. I mean, I'd rather go out to the movies, to be honest with you, because when I watch at home, I rarely finish the whole movie in one sitting, you know? So I have to come back and finish. When I'm in the theater, I sit there for the 2 hours I watch the movie. So that's the thing for me. But still, I just feel that they've alienated a lot of people. I mean, how many people have $50 to spend on a date? You know, I mean, you look at a couple of teenagers, whatever, wanting to go to the movies because those are the biggest audience. They can't afford that.
Right. Well, that's where, again, technology comes in. But watching a movie, reading a book, hopefully reading my novel, it's escapism. You forget your troubles. You watch this great creative experience, whether it's a movie or a book. And I think you learn a lot. I think you see how other people interpret facts and interpret life and interpret problems and situations. Again, I tried to do it in my book where Sloan turns 50. And he's facing, what does he want to do with his life? Mm. So it's not only a political book, but it's a book about a milestone in life and one struggles, what gives you happiness?
Yeah.
If you think about staying on music, Sloan was a singer for a number of years, so he sang some of his hit songs thousands of times.
Yeah.
And I remember reading David Crosby of the Byrds made a comment about how many times he had sung Mr. Tambourine Man.
Really?
And if you think about it, it must be thousands.
Right.
So you have to maintain, and it works for some people. They could sing it, the same song, thousands of times. Other people, my character wanted to move on.
Yeah, I know. And that's with a lot of things. I think even comedians, right, Rachel? It's like you have to do the same set over and over and over, and it gets old after a while, no?
Yeah, but you always want to add or work on it, or
right.
you know, you can tweak it and add
that's
more.
That's actually in comedy. You can change even the whole thing.
There are people,
music
who,
people
like,
already
certain
know
comics
the songs.
Work on jokes for years.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Work on them over and over.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it's true. If you have a big hit, people expect you to sing it. And over and over and over again, you know.
Well, I had a great experience. I took my two sons to see Paul McCartney at Dodger Stadium.
I saw him.
About three, 4 years ago.
It was awesome.
It was tremendous.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, I was experiencing those old Beatles songs again, you know, the soundtrack to my life. And to my sons, I was just amazed. And they listened to it like you did from their parents. And but McCartney has been singing those Beatles songs for 50 years now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and that's what people want to hear.
That's
they want
true.
To hear Beatles or Wings or maybe some of his bigger solo stuff.
Right, right. Not the latest stuff.
No,
it's
sad but true. I mean,
yeah.
We all want to hear the Beatles
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, anytime right. I'm like, Paul, sing something I know the words to.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, with Wings, they had a lot of great songs. They really had a lot. I mean, if you think about all the songs that Paul McCartney has written over the years, it's got to be like, what, hundreds?
I would say in the hundreds near a thousand, sure.
And dozens of hits.
Right.
Dozens of top 10 or something, probably.
Well, in my book, Sloan, as a musician, has a great knowledge of music and rock stars. And there was one, without reading the book on air, but there was one line where somebody, his aide, criticized him for one appearance he was off on.
Right.
He just didn't do a good job. And he said, well, not every song McCartney wrote was yesterday. So everybody can have a day off now and then.
Right. Well, so, but Rachel, you relate to the book. I mean, it's in Vegas and everything. Do you mention, it's obviously not all happening on the Strip. Did you describe some of the streets, some of the cities? In the
yes,
parts
I did.
In the city?
I went off the Strip, and I have one scene I really like, and it happened almost by accident. My wife and I were driving in Las Vegas, and we went through a very old and sort of rough part of Las Vegas.
Is that North Las Vegas?
Sort of east of downtown on Fremont.
Like near D Street, probably, like where all the lettered streets are. That's like where
yeah, downtown.
That's, yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But, Rachel, away from the sort of good part of downtown. It's
yeah,
a tough
yeah.
part.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah that's what yeah. I'm talking. There's Martin, like you go down there, like Martin Luther King Boulevard, and they start having these streets that are just named letters, like D Street, E Street, F Street, and those, like.
Yeah.
Growing up, we always knew, and that's down by, like, near Fremont, but, like, off
yeah.
the side.
Exactly.
The
we're
neighborhoods.
Driving down there, and these old motels,
yeah.
I'm talking from the 40s, that I don't know if they've been redone, and there's some tough characters walking those streets. So that was part of it, because, again, Las Vegas is a fascinating city. You have billion-dollar properties, and 2 miles away, you have this very rough part of town, and then 10 miles away, you're in the desert.
It's yeah. a very, it's a, it is, a, it's like a, it's a weird mix of people in the town. It's a very working class town, but like you said, you have billions of dollars, like you have money coming in
right.
fast amounts every day. So it's a weird,
a lot of money
it's a
there
weird place
in the casino, in the hands of the casino.
It was, it's interesting to, you don't realize how weird of a place it is until you leave. And I think it took
That's
me.
That's true, right?
I thought it was normal. I thought everyone had slot machines in their
yeah, right?
grocery stores. I thought everywhere was 24 hours. I thought the world just 24 hours. You
really?
Could, you know?
Yeah. What about getting away from the heat? I mean, it's like
I hated
for many
the,
years.
I hated going anywhere cold because
yeah.
of Vegas.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it does get cold there. But
no,
like,
it does, but in
but
the
it's
summer,
still
it's
sunny.
Very hot.
It's still like sunny mostly year
right,
round,
but crisp, very crisp in the winter.
Rachel, when you mentioned it's a 24-hour town, I remember when I was in my early 20s, I went with my buddies to Las Vegas. We went to a club. We got there kind of late, and I remember asking the bouncer, the manager, "When do you close?" And he looked at me real puzzled, and he said, "Why would we close?"
Yeah, right.
And okay, this is good. There's no reason to close. We're in Las Vegas.
Exactly. You know, we're here, everything closes at 9. There's nowhere to eat. There's nothing to do here after 9, 10 o'clock. You live in the city, so it's a little later.
Yeah, Hollywood is very similar to, like, the Strip.
That's
I think that's
true,
why
right?
I feel at home there in,
yeah.
the, in the, like, chaos
a lot
of
action of
it
all the time.
And just, like, strange characters walking around, sleeping outside my apartment. But Yeah, I mean, I can see the fascination with Vegas because it is a very fascinating city.
Yeah.
There's not much like it. I mean, if you think about it, it's
well, New Atlantic City tried to be Vegas.
Yeah, that's
but they failed.
Miserably. I went to the Caesars in Atlantic City, and I was confused. I was like, this is mini Caesars. This will never be the Caesars Palace.
Right.
This is like Caesars' hideaway from his wife and kids that he doesn't tell anyone about.
Yeah, it's not
where he goes to see
palace.
His mistress.
That's yeah, right.
Caesars in Atlantic City, or what is that? That's Caesars, right? Or they?
Yeah,
have,
yeah, that's a good analogy.
I like that.
Or I don't know if they have. Is it Caesars in Atlantic City? They have another. It's the same.
They do have Caesars there. Okay, yeah, they have a lot of Vegas hotels actually. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. That's funny though.
Wow. I don't know. It just I was I mean, but then I couldn't. Did you ever watch Boardwalk Empire?
No.
That was about the boardwalk, the Atlantic City. I never watched it, but
yeah,
I think
that's
it was
what
like
it
the
was
history
about.
Of it. But there's a lot of characters from New Jersey who built Las Vegas.
Yeah.
A lot of that money.
Yeah, I know Vegas is an interesting story. You know, if you see. What was it, Bugsy?
It's built from the mob.
Yeah,
Bugsy Siegel. And, you know, I was talking to Rachel before we went on air, and Las Vegas, how did it happen? I mean, you have this now city of over a million people. The NFL is going there. The hockey, NHL is
there. They got a deal. The land was cheap. The guy knew that this opportunity was going to be, you know, whoever first started. They took advantage of something. They knew. He was a visionary. He knew at some point, you know, if you build it, they will come, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Or something. Or maybe they just had to have I don't know. It just... Those mobsters were onto something.
They were onto something, and it paid off.
Yeah.
And it paid off. And I'll tell you one interesting thing about Nevada. There's so many interesting things. But Nevada, if you drive there, you're driving on in the desert. You're in California. You're surrounded by this barren, almost wasteland. And then all of a sudden, you get close to the Nevada border, and you see the city of Prim.
Mm-hmm.
State line, right.
Yeah.
Three hotels just popped up there.
I love driving into State Line, but the thing about Vegas is the mob built Vegas, basically, right? Mob
right,
money.
Right.
But my dad's boss, when he was a city councilman, was the mayor of Las Vegas, Oscar Goodman, who was the lawyer to the mob. Before he was the mayor.
Really?
He was a criminal defense attorney.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And he plays
that's
himself
true.
In the movie Casino.
Ah.
The mob's lawyer.
Yeah, yeah.
So even, like, that's how intertwined, even politics
and law
corruption
and everything.
Or whatever, the mob, basically. So, yeah. I mean...
It's like no secret, right?
Well, it's not only no secret. I'll go one further, Sam.
He's a hero, by the way. Oscar
right?
Goodman is... I mean, in Vegas, he's a local celebrity. I mean, not just to Vegas, but we love
him.
A
fixture.
And his wife is now the mayor.
Really?
And his son is a politician.
Wow.
And in Las Vegas, they don't shy away from that history. There's a mob museum.
Mm-hmm.
And... It's a fascinating view. I mean,
I call my sister the Ivanka of because my sister's a lawyer and she works in my dad's in district attorney and they work in the same building. You know,
yeah,
and it's just
it's similar.
Nepotism.
Watch how your dad runs for mayor one day.
No,
you know? No,
mm-mm.
No.
Mm-mm. Mm. Mayor doesn't have a lot of power. They're more of a figure.
Really?
Mm-hmm. He has way more power as a DA than he does as a mayor.
Oh, wow. Okay. See, that's interesting. I never knew that. Mm.
Or he's in charge of a lot more, too.
Yeah.
But mayor is more of just like a public figure. I mean, yeah, they have a job, but they're more of just like, I'm the mayor, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's a ceremonial job in large part, but it is prestigious. And... you know, I worked in Los Angeles city politics. The mayor has power. The city council has a lot of power and authority. And when I wrote Roll the Dice, I why did I pick Nevada? I just found it a fascinating place, Las Vegas, so different. And I tried to make it, you talk about the summer heat. the character Sloan is running for an election because of somebody dying. So it's what's called a special election. And I want the special election to be in August. So I have the special election in August. So he's campaigning. You know, it's 110 degrees.
Yeah.
And the heat is part of a character.
You see, there you go. You put the reader right there, you know.
I tried to, yes, sir.
Yeah, very cool. We're talking to Wayne Evershaw, and his book is Roll the Dice. You can get it anywhere, of course. It sounds fascinating to me. I mean, I enjoy good fiction. I'm right in the middle of Stephen King's new book, which means I still have 400 pages to go, and I'm in the middle of it. Right in the middle. So, but I'll make this one my next fiction book for sure, you know?
Well, I hope so.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's on Amazon and, again, available. It's got good reviews so far.
Good.
It won an award before it was published, which gave me the confidence, really, to pursue it. It won a Kirkus Award for Best Unpublished Manuscript.
That's cool.
So when I received that, that gave me the confidence.
It's very validating.
Exactly. It validated me, and it helped me get an agent, because then I would pitch that to agents. And if you ever, I don't know if your listeners are in television or actors, actresses, comedians like Rachel, but if we try to sell your work, you face rejection after rejection after rejection. So. But then somebody says yes. It's like, okay, this is good. And we move forward.
Yeah. So you had to deal with a lot of rejection until you found someone.
Yes. Yes. The award helped greatly, but I sent out dozens of letters and emails to agents who represent fiction writers. And you get some, you just get, again, rejection after rejection. I had one I thought kind of humorous. I sent it out. I'm a lawyer, so I sent the letter out on my legal stationery to try to be impressive. I
thought, well, right,
you know, I'm not some flaky person. I'm an attorney. Okay, take me seriously. And one agent wrote on my letter, I will never, underline never, represent an attorney, with a couple explanation points. So I looked at it. I thought, well, why did you have to do that?
Yeah, right.
But I figured this agent had a bad experience.
With attorneys.
And he was...
Nothing personal against you. You probably didn't even read the manuscript.
No, he nothing personal. He just
exactly.
He heard attorney, and exactly. Some people would hear it and go, well, maybe we got, you know, John Grisham or Balducci or somebody else, but this guy didn't want me.
Okay. Well, but you see, that's just the
one guy you remember.
Did
he just put one exclamation? Like, did he really need to put seven? You know?
Not only that, but notice how we always remember the critical ones, you know? I don't know, man. It's like somehow we always hold on to the one negative comment, one this, one that. I don't know why we do that, but you got to
be
encouraged. I feel
like those comments make you work harder. Like, those are the ones you need to get across
the
finish
line. That's
true.
Maybe those are the messages, the writing on the wall.
Because usually it's like after that, that's when you get not what you want, but like something good comes from one door closes, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's the attitude you have to have.
Right.
I mean, you just got to keep going. That's what I've talk to other aspiring writers, and one asked me, you know, what's the secret? I said, there's no secret, but you just have to keep going.
Yeah,
right.
It's the same in comedy, too. I mean, it's because people
you
just
don't give up, man.
They quit. They're like, it's not happening for me. And it's just like, well,
yeah.
Quit.
I think that's pretty much the common denominator here, that, you know, that it takes work, it takes dedication, and it takes persistence. And consistency, you know, you have to be consistency. You have to be
grit. It takes grit.
Focus, anything you want to call it. But the bottom line is you can't stop in the middle, because only when you stop can people say you failed. But if you're still working on it, you haven't failed. You know, it's very simple.
Very good, Sam. I like that a lot.
Yeah,
that's very good. But, you know, all these stories are well known, but John Grisham, the novelist, was rejected by many publishers. And the Beatles, famously, were rejected time after time.
There's a great online about all of the most successful people, and there's like letters of rejection or just just like them being turned down by some of the most famous people who probably end up biting their tongue, you know?
Yeah.
Right. I've seen something.
You know what
I'm I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's like even Madonna. It's like all from every, from like writers, actors, singers, like anyone who, a creative really, who's at, you know, all the best people that we know and they were rejected at some point by people they admired.
Yeah. Well, again, the Beatles story is the bottom line was, the best line was somebody told their manager, Brian Epstein, guitar bands are on their way out.
Really?
So, no thanks, Brian. Okay. So, Decca Records lost.
Yeah, there you go. Well, good thing is that, you know, if people didn't persist, then maybe they'd never be as big as they are, you know, because we would never know about them. Sounds good. Well, so Wayne, tell people how they can find you if they want to follow you. Are you on social media?
I'm pretty active on social media. I have a great assistant, Martha, who helps me on social media. But I'm on Facebook and Twitter and my webpage, my name, WayneAvershow.com, AVRASHOW. The book, again, Roll the Dice on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And everything's going good so far.
Do you think someone will want to make it into a movie?
I'm glad you ask. I received my agent, Linda Langton, who's terrific.
I feel like this would be a really good movie.
Well, thank you. I'm biased, but I think so, too. Linda is sold a couple of books for movies. Her biggest success was there was a movie, Trumbo, about 4 years ago with Bryan Cranston.
I love Bryan Cranston.
It was a great movie.
He should be
movie.
In your movie.
Yeah.
I feel like he would be a good character.
So Linda is pitching my book for movie now, but you know it's a long way from pitching to acceptance. But
like I would want it to be on like Netflix or like a Netflix, like produce some like really
That's
good
probably
content,
what's going
to
happen.
You know what I mean?
Well, come back when it's a movie.
Yeah, we can't
know?
Wait to you sold a movie. We're going to put it out in the universe. We're going to put it out there.
There you go.
You know, manifest it.
But I'm going to read the book and give you a review. I'll give it an honest review, okay? Not biased because I know you now. I'll give you an honest one. But it sounds good and you're a good man. So,
well, thank you, Sam. Appreciate that.
Of course. Now, we only have a couple minutes left. So I wanted to ask, really, what's next for you? I mean, do you plan on anything? What do you have planned for the future for yourself?
Well, I'm honestly I've begun writing a sequel to the book. I met with my agent. She's out of New York, but she was out here a few months ago, and I bounced two ideas off her, and she gave me her professional opinion that if you have a sequel, that's the easiest for her to work with.
Yeah.
So I've begun writing that. I practice law, and those are my two... occupations now.
Awesome. Well, Wayne, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Well, Sam and Rachel, thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Of course. You're a lot of fun. And everybody go out, get the book, contact Wayne. So you specialize in what law again? Tell people.
I do real estate and land use, representing clients before government agencies. But I'm busy with that, and I'm busy with writing. So those are my two interests now.
Yeah. Okay, do you want to give a shout-out to anybody?
Well, I just want to thank every... Yeah, well, there's a couple of people. You know, I have two great sons, Brett and Grant. My wife, Ann, was very helpful to me on this. My brother, Craig. And my political career, and which led to the book, started with Zev Yaroslavsky. Zev was a longtime city councilman and county supervisor, and I met Zev about 40 years ago.
Wow.
I was a student. He was getting ready to run for his first campaign, and I ran Zev's campaign. And that's what started the whole political... I was interested before... But I've maintained a good friendship with Zev over the years.
Wow. Well, we'll have to have you back just for a political discussion then, because we didn't even get to touch on it with you. And I don't want to start now because we're totally out of time. You know.
Look forward to it.
Yeah, but we'll probably talk a little bit off the air and stuff. But at any rate, thanks again. Rachel, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I hope you feel better.
Just, you know, that time of the month.
Well, we'll get there too. But everybody have a great weekend, and we'll see you all on Monday.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.